This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Renee here,
I'm Stephanie O'Connell,
and I'm Vicky Marie Buchanan. So welcome back. We've got your wonderful life, Renee, that you're telling us about, and it's so interesting, and your lovely, handsome husband, Christy, has walked into your life, and you have just got married, and you met him at a dance. So you're through this. You have still been working at Glenarua School, haven't you? Teaching
Just to the end of that year.
To the end of that year.
Yes.
So that was in 1940.
I resigned actually to leave before I got married.
Right.
But the education department got in touch with me, to their advantage, I suppose, too, and said that if I stayed till the end of the year, then I would get paid till the end of January.
Ah, yeah. Clever.
So we agreed on that. But I didn't go back to the school again, of course, that next year.
Right. So can we just touch, because that Glenarua School back then, that was 1949,
you got married. 48.
So you were
49.
So 49.
No, I taught 1948. Yes.
Right. So and you had been teaching there a few years before, or were you going around different schools?
No.
I was there solidly from 44 till I was got to the year that I was married.
Right. So then the classes, was it a big school or a little school?
Two teacher school. Two teacher.
Right.
Yes. Okay. And most of the schools were around here except Arua Downs, which was four, and Rongotia, which was three.
Right. And so the classes, was it sort of like a junior wing and then a senior wing?
I went there first, I think my class might have been about in the late 30s, children.
Right.
But by the end of the year, the head teacher's name was Mr. Wilkinson, Dan Wilkinson. His wife was Ina, and she had been a teacher too.
Right.
And they lived next door to the school.
Right.
My house is gone now.
Right.
They had my class suddenly, a lot of children. It was after the war, you see.
Right.
And there were a lot of babies being born. People coming back onto the farms, and men coming out here to work on a farm with children.
Right.
And the school started to grow.
Yeah.
And at one stage, I had 48 children.
And what ages?
And then the headmaster said, well, you know, that wasn't
nice.
Right. So he agreed to take the best of my, most of my standard twos.
Right.
Which sort of evened up a bit. I still had 40, I think. But
40 children. So that was from, like, primers.
Primers to standard two.
To standard two, my golly gosh. Now, 40 children.
I do remember that there was one boy that he left behind. Some of those children, though, the ones that were in standard two, some of them were 9 years old. They had just sort of, they did. You had to improve to move. You didn't automatically go from class to class.
Oh, and so that's how. Sorry to interrupt, but I'm just sort of thinking: how did you function as a teacher from a primer one who's learning to read through to a standard two? There's a lot of planning in that.
Yeah, well, there was,
isn't there? So how did you run a classroom with that?
Just about that stage, they decided on this. I think I might have picked it up at training college. I picked quite a lot of things up at training college.
Just
and one of them was the children should have a rest.
Right. So,
just as I was trying to work out how I was going to hear the standard one and two reading with the others suddenly the education board arrived with a huge mat. It was for the children to sit on, you know. So I thought, well, this is right. So I put it down on the ground and I had the children lie on it.
Oh, that's
and
clever.
Some of them went to sleep even.
Yeah.
So they lay on there for about 20 minutes while I heard the standard one and twos reading.
Oh, good one.
Were they restless?
Eh?
Were they restless?
No, they weren't. That was it. It was really amazing how it worked. And of course, after a while, when they knew it was coming,
yes.
And I can remember one family, there's a little boy, and he used to come in from the play always sweating because he was always running and he would lie on the floor and his face would be just bathed in sweat but he would go fast asleep.
I bet he would after that. Oh, so it worked out and they all got into the idea
they
and
got
the pattern
into
of
that
it.
Plan, yes, yes. And the other in those days used to hear every child read.
Yep. Yes.
Because they were all various stages, they were all at various parts of the books, you know. Yeah. And they were reading then at that stage. They had class readers, you know.
Right.
You went through the
yes.
group.
Yes. Yeah. Gosh, isn't that amazing, really, when you think about it now. And they were disciplined? The children were very disciplined?
They were very good, yes. Especially at Glenroy, they were very good, yes.
Wow, that's impressive. So then you got married.
Yes. well, as I say, I met Christy used to meet him at the dances, and then he started having the supper dance with me. This is the way it usually went.
Right.
And then he started taking me home.
Oh,
so if you had the supper dance with somebody, generally speaking,
no, you didn't always go home. No, you. But sometimes,
right,
sometimes, yes.
Right.
But I mean, up at Glenroy, it meant going in somebody's car. It wasn't just somebody taking you down,
walking
the
you
road.
Down the road. No, yes, no. Yes, yes. So he took you home, and love blossomed. And when were you married?
On the 13th of November 1948, I was married in Whanganui.
Right.
I went home a week before to get...
Yes.
And it was rather funny because there was a parish priest in Whanganui who had been there for many, many years, and he wanted me to go over on the Friday before... to have a practice. Well, I mean, there was nobody in the party that lived in Whanganui except so said it wasn't possible. So the priest that did marry me was a lovely man, Father Steve O'Connor. He said, well, you know, I've got the job because Father, I can't remember his name now, he said, no, this girl hasn't had any practice, so you can take it. I don't know what dreadful thing I was going to do. Yes.
So when did you come to the farm here in Taikaria?
Well, when we didn't come here to live, we went... Christy's uncle, Mikey, next door, he had a cottage on the farm that he had put there for his share milkers.
Right.
Just a couple they were.
Right.
And they had left. So he said, well, we could have the house, you see. So at that stage we were going to build, and then we have a hump on the roadway out there now where they took the top off it so they could build this house. But anyhow, when this came up, we left the house building thing out. And so we moved over there to that. And we stayed there for till Christopher was born. He was the second child, and then we moved over. People called Mudfords had a house. The grandmother had lived in this house, and she'd gone to live with her son, so the house was empty, and they offered it to us. So so we lived there till Timmy was, before Timmy was, Timmy wasn't a baby. Timmy was, we moved in January, and Timmy was born in the August.
Oh, so he wasn't born. James was the baby.
James was the baby. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So,
and from then on, we've been here in this house, and they moved a house down there, and built onto it for the
Christie's
parents and his brother,
who were living in this house.
Oh yeah. My goodness! So, how many children did you have altogether?
Well, actually, I had 12.
12 children. But
the last 11 and 12 were twins.
Right.
And they were born 11 weeks early.
Wow.
And at that stage, they didn't take tests or scans or anything like that. And my doctor was in fishing in the Sounds. And so I just went into the hospital to see him. The babies were imminent. So the doctor, my doctor wasn't available, so they got this doctor to do it. And I can't remember what his name was, but I know that everybody said, well, you're lucky that they were born after before lunch, because he's not always as capable after lunch.
Oh, super. You're not the same. Right.
No.
Anyhow, I don't remember it anyway. But so that Frances was born, and she was at 1 pound, 14 ounces, I found out afterwards. And then he was dealing with this little newborn baby and making sure it was breathing and whatnot. And then he said, oh, there's another one here. Now, this was, it was 4 minutes then before the other one was born. She was alive, and they had them in a little
incubator.
Yeah. What do you call it?
Crib incubators.
Side by side. And they used to take me down in a wheelchair to have a look at them. And they said, oh, just have a look, because if Mary won't move unless... they were calling Frances Joan at that stage, unless Joan moves. And so I waited, and after a while Frances moved her left arm and Mary moved her right arm.
Goodness.
They did everything in any movement was the opposite.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
But anyhow, she only lived for two and a half days. But then my doctor came back, and he was very upset about it. Not that he could have done anything about it, but he said that he insisted on having an autopsy. And they discovered that there was absolutely nothing wrong with her, that she was just too late being born.
Oh, And that's the times, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that
was. Isn't it?
It wouldn't happen this day. There's so much more sophisticated
technology and all that sort of thing, isn't there?
Yeah, so she was the last one then.
Right. So all the children grew up here. Stephanie, what number are you?
I'm number three from the top.
Number three from the top.
Yeah. And then Marianne, there was one after me.
And then Marianne was 16, and she was in her last year at school, and she was...
the day before she went back...
It was a church, and they'd been coming home from church. We had, at that stage, a van with sliding door on it.
Oh, yes, yes.
No, it was an opening door.
It was one of the old ones with an open
door. And they had, because this took all the children... And Chris was driving, and he had gone up to church. I think Tim was in the middle, and you were on the outside, weren't you?
And I was on the inside, Mary was on the outside.
Marianne was sitting behind, and she was reading the jokes out of the Sunday paper.
Oh, yeah.
And she apparently hadn't shut the door properly, and she lensed again. Now, they were actually nearly stopping, so they weren't speeding or anything like that. They were just about ready to stop. and she leant against the door. The door flew open and she fell out, but the door came back and hit her.
Oh.
And so she was dead straight away, really, wasn't she?
Well, she was alive. She was dead on arrival at the hospital.
Yes.
How awful for
so
you.
So we didn't know that, and no. They came home, sent her.
You were at home waiting for us. It was Trisha's birthday as well.
Yeah,
we were going blackberry picking.
What's his name? Bill Choate, the headmaster of the school down here. He came up and told us, and so we went into the hospital, not knowing at that stage I remember being told at the hospital that she wasn't alive. Were there already?
I went into the ambulance for the last stage. I can remember the young doctor, who was just a very young doctor.
Was Kippy with you too?
Yes. And he was just so distressed.
Yes, yeah. Oh, what an awful thing for all of you.
It was.
Yeah.
And that was the day. The next day I was supposed to start teaching at a Ruadown school.
Right.
But I couldn't.
No.
And so I went, after a week I went back down there.
Right.
And that was a good thing too, wasn't it?
It was a good thing, yes. Mm. Yeah.
It was something
to get back into, something to take your mind totally off it. Mm. So then you stayed teaching at Ruadown School?
Just for the year.
Right.
I was only contracted for a year.
Right.
Yeah. And then I came back home again, and I did do a bit of relieving at various, someone was sick or... Mm.
Mm. You were the official reliever down here at Taikaria, though.
I was
quite a long time, didn't you?
Yeah, at various times, yeah.
And did you all your children went to Taikaria School, or did you?
Yes, we all went to Taikaria.
All went to Taikaria School.
Yeah.
You were teaching down there sometimes when you're...
With the younger ones, yeah.
And certainly when your grandchildren were there, you were relieving sometimes.
Yeah,
so all the grandchildren went to Taikaria as well.
Because all the children, all my children are in New Zealand at the moment, and only one overseas, isn't it? Stephanie.
Yes.
Only one grandchild at the moment.
Overseas.
Wow, that's amazing. And now you've got the great grandchildren, Penny, Jake, and Cora, going to Glenarua School.
It's full circle.
Yeah. Did you teach back at Glenarua School, or did you, after you had
often I did, yeah.
Right. So you went a full time teacher then again back at Glenarua, or?
Not full time.
No. The only time I was full time teaching was in the Ruadowns,
talked about
before.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, so you've seen lots and lots of change. What about the farm when you came here? What did the farm look like when you got here?
It was different to me because we had a sheep farm.
Right.
In Whanganui, in Tokemarau.
Right.
And the Saunders that I bought, they also had a sheep farm.
Right.
So it really
did they have any dairy?
Who?
Saunders.
I had two cows.
Sounds nice.
Yeah. It's like they did it at home, where they used to have a man living in the, and his wife living in the house, who milked the cows, who did the firewood and all the odd jobs around. Mm. This is what Billy Blair, my father's on our farm at home, they had the men who were working on the farm, they'd go out either working with the sheep or with the cutting scrub mainly.
Right.
Although they used to get contractors in to cut the scrub.
Mm.
There was some scheme. This is what happened during the slump.
Right.
Because people couldn't get jobs.
Right.
So they used to have these schemes.
Mm.
And this one was Scheme B, and you would get four scrub cutters.
Right.
Well, they would go out and cut scrub at our place.
Mm.
It's behind the takedown Maggie to do Steffi, because this is the place where they, in one particular place, they used to do it.
and Manga Iti up there on the picture that we're looking at on the wall.
Just over that flat area there.
Yes.
And it's all covered in scrub again now, probably. Yes. But they used to go over there. Now, they would have a camp and their tent. And my father would take over every day. My father would take them meat and milk and bread, things like that, you know, so that we'd get it from the mailman and my mother would cook the meat and whatever, and they would take it over there.
So did you feed them? Did you have to pay them as well, or did the government pay them?
No, you had to pay them. But you pay. I think you did it through the government, though, because you didn't pay each man individually.
No.
It was a scheme thing.
Yes.
And they told you how much it was, and you paid it.
Yeah.
But and there was one man, there was wrestling used to be on the radio.
Right.
We didn't, there was no TV, of course. But we had a radio. And so this man used to walk over from that place every night after he'd finished his work, walk from, it must have been about 4 or 5 miles, but, you know, through bush and up and down hills. And he would come to listen to the wrestling.
Right.
And
the
wrestling finished at 11 o'clock because the radio closed down at 11.
Yeah, right.
And then he would just go all the way. I think it was on a Thursday night, if I remember right.
What did Pam think of that? Was she interested?
Oh, no,
that
was all right.
Oh, my God.
He used to come in and he would just sit in a chair all the time he was there, and Pam would give him some supper. But, you know, it was...
The community.
Yeah.
You must, getting back to here, you must have, with 11 children... in your house, you must have run it like a very tight ship too.
Did I, Stephanie?
Oh well, we all had jobs. We had jobs at the time. We were very small.
Yes, you'd have to.
My job, one of my main jobs, which I had all the time I was living at home, was peeling the potatoes for tea. And with the little kids, there was quite a few potatoes, and also not a lot of money. So we had, you know, potatoes were quite a staple.
Yes.
But I've never been able to calculate the right amount of potatoes because I put a few in a pot from just our small family.
Yes.
And it looks enough.
Too many because you're used to peeling it for 11 people.
Well then, of course, Bernadette left home to go to boarding school when she was 13.
So she went to the same boarding school you did?
But she was the only one that did, because by the time the next one came, there was a boys' high school, Chris went to that. But
you gave me the choice to go, I didn't want to go. I used to get terribly homesick, but after that it was too expensive.
When Marianne came, it was too expensive.
So Chris, he took over the farm here. That's Kippy, isn't it?
Yes.
He took over the farm here.
Chris and Tim. Well, they took over both farms. This one and Uncle Mikey's next door, which is part of the hair farm now.
Tim's
got one and Kippy's got this one.
So down Taikaria Road, there's a lot of hares.
There is.
The hare family, the hare whānau.
My youngest brother has also got a house just down from... put some land off Tim.
So the cousins were here too.
They lived over the highway on Omanuka Road.
Right.
And when the last one of them died, they left them to our boys. So they had two farms, one on one road, one in Pukipuk. And James got Pukipuk, and what did Jared get? I can't remember. They sold them, and the boys divided those two, and these two here just divided these.
So Rima, you were working part time, then doing some relief and some teaching and things. You were running a family with 11 children in here, plus you were on the farm, working on the farm, no doubt, were you?
No, I never did a lot of work on the farm.
You didn't.
Christy's brother and Christy's father used to milk until he was quite old, didn't he?
Yes,
he liked to because he said it kept him his fit.
Yes.
Mostly his fingers because he was able to use
his arthritis and his fingers, didn't he? But Jimmy, Christy's brother, he never married either, so he lived down there with his parents.
Right.
And he worked on the farm as well. So
Right.
Mummy didn't have to milk.
No, I
didn't. Plenty there. Yeah. What would you say would be some, this is going to really put you on the spot, what would you say would be some real joy that you will look back, that you look back on and think that was just such joy in your life?
Well, I suppose mainly around the children. Mm-hmm. Yes. Christy and I had some happy times. We went on a trip overseas together. We had 3 months in England and France and Ireland. With Christy's brother, youngest brother, was a Catholic priest, and his name was Bernard too.
Right.
And he was he took us.
You would never been able to do it without him, would you?
No. He hired a van.
Yeah.
And we drove in this van all over England, Ireland, and
lovely Europe. Scotland. You went to Scotland.
Scotland, yeah. So at that stage, we went through our to our ancestors' places.
Mm. Mm.
So I went to my Scottish ancestors in a Boyne, and I went to the house that they lived in still. There's it up there. Barbara, who did that? Ruth did it.
Lots of memories, though, isn't there? And lots of absolute joy, and then looking at your family and what they've all achieved, and then looking at you here at 100 years old now.
She has 101 descendants.
101 descendants. What an impact.
I get another one to come up in May.
isn't that wonderful? What a huge legacy that you've left here, and what a huge impact you've made in this world too, and are still making in this world with your family. It's wonderful. So, congratulations, happy birthday, and enjoy life onwards. Thank you for sharing your story with us. That's wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.